You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
If you don't build your dream, someone else will hire you to help them build theirs. Ideas are no one's monopoly. If you're born poor, it's not your fault. But if you die poor, it is your fault. We cannot change our rulers, but we can change the way they rule us. True entrepreneurship comes only from risk-taking. One man, many coats. Numerous odds, but untold success. We're talking about the patriarch of Reliance Industries. That's Dheeraj Lal Hirachand Ambani himself, or Dhirubhai Ambani as the world knows him. He is, of course, the man who built the foundation for a business family whose interests span continents. He is the man who founded India's largest private firm and the second largest publicly traded company, Reliance Industries. He was featured in the Sunday Times among the top 50 businessmen in Asia. He made Reliance Industries go public in 1977, and by 2002, the combined fortune of the family was $6 billion. So yes, this is a family like no other. And the story began with a few coins and a vision that created abundance even when it was not yet visible.
The Business of Family, Reliance and Dhirubhai Ambani, an exclusive on Money Control.
On the Digging Deep podcast series, Business of Family, we've been bringing you stories of great big Indian families that began initially not with the intention to create empires with several family branches, but with the need to offer solutions and answers responsive to the economic and political situations of the time. From pre-independence businesses drenched in Swadeshi fervor to post-independent businesses that dealt with the restrictive economic climates and also the open markets of liberalization, we've covered many narratives. In post-independence India, few businesses have grown as audaciously and spiritedly as the Reliance Group founded by Dhirubhai. From a humble polyester firm bristling with ambition, Reliance went on to venture into diverse sectors like manufacturing of synthetic fibers, textiles and petrochemical products, oil and gas exploration, petroleum refining, telecommunications, media, retail and financial services. All family stories have their own dynamics, and so after the death of Dhirubhai Ambani on the 6th of July in 2002, Reliance went through a regrouping. In October of 2005, the split of the Reliance Group was formalized by Dhirubhai Ambani's heirs. Elder son Mukesh Ambani got Reliance Industries and IPCL, while Anil Ambani, his younger son, received telecom, power, entertainment and financial services. But let's go back to the very beginning, to the story of a pioneer who thought of wealth as a shared asset and realized not only his own dreams, but also those of his shareholders. Dheeraj Lal, or Dhirubhai Hirachand Ambani, was born on the 28th of December in 1932 in a school teacher's humble home in a remote village in Gujarat. But even as a child with no prospects, he dreamt big. He saw himself riding a car and answering salutes. Unlike the scions of established business empires, Dhirubhai did not have the privilege of attending the best business schools in the world and learned instead from life itself. Not particularly interested in academics, he stopped studying after the 10th standard and went on to join his second cousin, Ramnik Lal, to work as a clerk and a petrol pump attendant in the port city of Aden in Yemen. His salary then was just 300 rupees a month, but he worked hard and was soon given charge of retail marketing and started earning 1,100 rupees a month. Legend has it that while working in Aden, Dhirubhai noticed that the local coins had a face value less than the value of the silver from which they were made. So he bought the coins, melted them down and pocketed a profit. This was a man in a hurry, someone who didn't want to wait for an opportunity but wanted one to manifest itself out of thin air. His personal life with his wife Kokilaben was moving ahead too as Mukesh was born in Aden. In 1957, Dhirubhai, now in his 20s, arrived in Mumbai after spending 8 years in Aden, where he had acquired street-smart resourcefulness, adaptability, and a fierce hunger and ambition. But there was not much else to fuel his dreams. With just 500 rupees, or as some others chronicling the story say, 50,000 rupees in his pocket, he set out to start with co-founder Champaklal Damani, his first humble trading venture. The first office of the Reliance Commercial Corporation was a 350-square-foot room with just a telephone, a table and a few chairs. The location was Narsinath Street in Masjid Bandar. The 8 years that followed were difficult and he and his family lived in one tiny room in Bhuleshwar. After trading in spices and fabrics, the intrepid Dhirubhai managed to own a modest spinning mill at Naroda near Ahmedabad. By 1965, differences had cropped up between Champaklal Damani and Dhirubhai, given Champaklal was a conservative businessman and Dhirubhai more adventurous in favour of taking risks. Given these differences, they decided to end their partnership and Dhirubhai decided to chart his own course, build inventories and realise dreams that at the time would have seemed foolhardy to many. The next chapter was straight out of a modern epic. By 1976 and 77, Reliance had an annual turnover of 70 crore rupees, and in 1977, Reliance Industries went public and did something unheard of back in the day. The company raised equity capital from over 58,000 people, many of whom did not fit the profile of moneyed investors. These were people with small savings but big dreams, just like Dhirubhai. Soon, the branding of in-house brand Vimal took center stage and the very popular jingles of Only Vimal began to echo all over the country and a bona fide polyester king was born. The growth of the brand was so phenomenal that on one magical day, retail outlets of as many as 100 franchisees were inaugurated. Dhirubhai is said to have also set up a massive 10,000-ton polyester yarn plant in just 14 months. With success came controversies, but the company managed to sail through them all, including the one at the Bombay Stock Exchange regarding partly convertible debentures. What Dhirubhai had also understood by this time was that in the modern, constantly evolving political scenario, it was important to understand and adapt to changing power equations. He understood the concept of networking and resourcefulness better than many of his peers and dealt with License Raj with great tact. In an interview to India Today, he said memorably, and we quote, "You have to sell your ideas to the government. Selling the idea is the most important thing. And for that, I'd meet anybody in the government. I'm willing to salam anyone. One thing you won't find in me, and that is an ego," unquote. But alongside his networking skills, he kept on improving on his marketing strategies and technological advancements. Along the way, there were rivalries and conflicts with formidable opponents like Musli Wadia and publisher Ramnath Goenka and politician VP Singh. But these came and went. The constant toil to expand his empire could have caused him to suffer a stroke in 1986, but the company was unstoppable. By the 1990s, Reliance has started diversifying into territories like financial services, petrochemicals, oil refining, telecommunications and more. Dhirubhai suffered another debilitating stroke on the 24th of June in 2002 and passed away on the 6th of July that year. On the podcast, let's now look at the legacy of Dhirubhai Ambani. Modern historians may tell the story of Dhirubhai Ambani through the prism of varied perspectives, but one fact will remain irrefutable, that Dhirubhai did not just build his empire for his immediate family. He made his company accessible to humble investors and turned Reliance into one of the most profitable investment opportunities for those who had never thought they could co-create a sprawling conglomerate before. He punched the Indian capital markets open to free them from exclusivity and the dominance of elite investors and changed the game forever by initiating a public offer of 2.8 million equity shares for just rupees 10 each. And as we've said before, 58,000 middle-class investors vindicated his faith in this move. These shareholders became part of his growth and part of his family, and many initial investors went on to make millions. One of the highlights of his eventful life was the annual shareholder meeting he presided over, and in 1986, the number of attendees was so huge that as many as 30,000 stockholders had to be accommodated in a maidan. He often complained about the fact that the middle class and salaried people with savings did not have the correct opportunities open to them for investment. In fact, he attributed the success of Reliance to his shareholders, to the fact that lakhs of investors joined hands with him to create a corporate success story which not only helps them but also enriches the country. In 1980 alone, the total resources mobilized in the capital market by him was over 100 crore rupees. In an interview to India Today, he once famously said, and we quote, "We had the water, but no pumping station. Everyone is now installing pumping stations. Just look at the number of people who've issued debentures. We can pump that money to 100 Reliances and build a strong country," unquote. After he passed away, many shareholders shared stories of how their shares facilitated family weddings, education of children, new homes, and paid off medical bills. He's also credited with bringing back convertible debentures and turned the non-convertible debenture into financing options. Subsequently, he literally became the Midas man of capital raising, raising large sums of money through a 7-year syndicated bullet loan in Europe. It was not just his money-raising and profit-making abilities that he will be remembered for. He was a perfectionist, someone who did not chase deadlines but beat them, managed and motivated his team unerringly, and set magnificent benchmarks like his first textile mill at Naroda in Gujarat in 1966 that was praised effusively by a technical team from no less than the World Bank. The man who was always ahead of his time made sure that his projects kept pace with him, and so he was the inspiration behind the setting up of the world's largest grassroots refinery at Jamnagar ahead of schedule. This despite a ferocious cyclone that had damaged the construction extensively. Moving on the podcast to share with you some memories of a man who both fascinated and stunned the media with his unconventional ways. Legendary editor T.N. Nainan with senior correspondent Jagannath Dubashi was one of the few journalists who managed a rare interview with the business legend during the years when Rajiv Gandhi was the Prime Minister. The interview appeared in India Today. The writers marveled at the fact that a man who had started his business in a cramped office with inadequate furniture now sat in a plush suite that was over 8,000 square feet of unadulterated luxury. White was supposedly his color of choice, from his own safari suit to the multiple telephones he owned, to the carpeting, to his deliciously glinting Cadillac. The interview captured the quirks of the tycoon, especially his jovial, down-to-earth manner, his sense of humor, his honest disclosures about his weight and exercise regimen, and his belief in a higher power that had nothing to do with rituals. Perhaps the only power Dhirubhai truly believed in was his own ability to do what others deemed impossible. There was also an evident guardedness given his history with journalists. One of the secrets of his success was that he never spoke about his plans before he had executed them, and dropped a telling one-liner when probed about the future, and we quote that one-liner, "I would not like to say what I want to do before I do it," unquote. So obviously, results mattered more to him than empty claims. This is a lesson that can hold any entrepreneur in good stead. However, he did speak about the ideas buzzing in his head and the worlds that Reliance had yet to conquer. He had said, and we quote, "We will seize every opportunity we get. We continuously monitor every area, but that does not mean we will go into all of them," unquote. The vision continues to grow, though the visionary is gone. Next week, we will deep dive into the next chapter of this Ambani story and talk about the twin empires of his sons. But coming back to Dhirubhai, he once summed up his success in these words, and we quote, "The success has come from supervising everything and everybody, seeing that everything runs to schedule, solving problems," unquote. Simple but hard to pull off by one man in one lifetime. But then, Dhirubhai Ambani was not just any man, and he lived many lifetimes in just one.
You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Reliance Industries Limited is the sole beneficiary of Independent Media Trust, which controls Network 18 Media and Investments Limited.
This is an exclusive podcast on Money Control.